All right, this hour we'll take your phone calls and continue chatting with Jeremy Finley, author of The Darkest Time of Night. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back, Jeremy Finley with us. His book is called The Darkest Time of Night. Where do people get the book, Jeremy?
Today is available everywhere, every bookstore across the country, on Amazon, your local independent store. The book is released today, and the audiobook is available as well if you prefer to do that. And it has an incredible person that's voiced it for us and with a great cover, and so I'm excited for everybody. Anywhere you buy books, it's available today.
What are the chances of the book becoming a movie?
Gosh, I really would just... think that would be amazing, George. I love films. I'm a huge movie buff, and you know, I have that secret dream, like every novelist does, that it could be made into a movie. So let's just keep our collective fingers crossed.
Keep pushing, indeed. What do you think of UFOs personally?
You know, I again go back to what we talked about in the last hour, is that any time that I have an opinion about anything or am interested in something, I like to go to the experts. And I fortunately have been able to do an extensive amount of research and listen to these people, whether they be former government experts or people that have done extensive research into this. And I'm like you, George. I am an extreme skeptic, but I have an extreme open mind. And I just have to believe, with all of these people telling similar stories and similar accounts all over the world, there's something going on that we don't know about.
Exactly.
And so I never want to dodge the question. I just am such a skeptic that I'm like, show me the proof, show me the proof. But let me tell you, I've done a whole lot of research that makes me think there's something going on that we just don't know about.
It's like Bigfoot. So many people have seen this creature. There's
right.
got to be something there.
And I think about this is that, and these are people, and you've had so many guests, you and Art have had so many guests on this show over the years who've experienced something. And these are not people that are seeking attention in a lot of cases. Some people, frankly, are. But there's a lot of these people are just truly horrified what they've experienced and what they've seen. And they want... They basically want someone to say, listen, I'm literally just wanting to share what I saw. I don't want to profit from it or whatever, but they've seen this and it has truly caused them to have a extreme fear in their life or some awful situation. They want to talk about it and they just want their stories told. And so I have to believe, I think, you know, these people are telling these stories that are so similar. There has to be something to it.
Let's go to some of the calls here. Let's go to Barbara in Raleigh, North Carolina, to get things going. First-time caller. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. I should mention first that I'm a former broadcaster back in the day when a third-class radio operator's license was required.
Remember those days.
Yes. And I would pull the news off the AP wire and edit it for the time required going up to the top of the hour. One of the things that I wanted to, and of course, the news, the information was coming to me, so it was just a matter of me editing it for the time
That's
frame.
Right, exactly.
In regards to the conversation and the concern about fake news, there's such a difference of two streams of thought right now, and depending on what channel a person's listening to, what that news content is. So, My question has to do with what's the definition of journalist? How is he defining who's the journalist versus those who are just the announcers and broadcasting the news? Since there's so two clearly defined sides of the political spectrum these days, where it's obvious if they were all digging for the truth, then wouldn't they be coming up a lot closer to each other?
A lot of it depends on interpretation, Jeremy, and that's, you know, part of the problems. You have two different reporters. You may have two different stories.
And it's so true. And Barbara, you raise a really great question. And I think it falls to all of us now to, again, go back to a true, clear unfiltered look at where we're getting our news from. So one thing that and what you said is absolutely true, George, you can have two reporters go at a story and come back with somewhat differing views of what happened. But I think what Barbara said is right. How can it be, if the truth is only one truth, why can we not all be moving in a more of a central collective thought here? Is wouldn't we all be heading in that same direction? I think what is vital for people to realize is that, of course, you know, Facebook has been truly criticized, and rightly so, for, you know, not filtering what people were reading. And so many people that weren't as critical in their thoughts as to what they were reading took everything as news. Oh, if it was on Facebook, then it was news. And then it came to find out that so much of it was incorrect. In my opinion, you have to be a critical news consumer. And in that sense, it means, okay, if I'm going to watch, let's say that I like CNN, let's say that I like Fox News, let's say that I like MSNBC. Well, I'm going to sit there and say, okay, if Sean Hannity comes on or if Rachel Maddow comes on, you know, I may like them a lot and I may think that they're really interesting and have some interesting perspective, but they are commentators. They are people with opinions, and they're sharing their opinions, and that's great, but a journalist doesn't share his or her opinion. A journalist brings you the information, gives you both sides, and says, okay, here is what I have found out today, and now you make your decision. And what I always have the conversation about, especially with family or friends of mine that lean one end of the political spectrum, they'll say, oh, I only like to watch Fox News, or I only like to watch CNN, or I only like to watch MSNBC. Because I like the people on there for whatever reason. And I said, listen, I said, that's fine. I said, but do you want to get your news from somebody who tells you what you want to hear? And I think that is the thing that we all have to be honest with ourselves about. Am I tuning into a news station or a network or something that tells me what I want to hear? And I think if that's the case, you need to flip the channel. Because I think as journalists need to tell you what is happening, and do not put an agenda on it. Now, I think what's happening, especially on the national level, in covering President Trump, is that a lot of journalists are becoming openly skeptical. And I think that is difficult for a lot of people in a lot of Americans to hear, because it comes off as being, well, you say the president's lying. You say that the president isn't telling the truth. And then you've got the president coming back and saying, you know, the news people aren't telling the truth. And I think what this is it is a natural skepticism. When you go back, and you go back, if you don't like the political environment now, go back to what Edward R. Murrow went through. Go back to when Woodward and Bernstein went through with Nixon. This has happened again, again, and again in history. John Meacham is a great historian that lives here in Nashville and has written great autobiographies of presidents. And he's got a great book out right now that talks about the soul of America, and that we have gone through these difficult times, and we have gone through these periods where you will have this mistrust in the media and this mistrust in government. And his message is, look, we've gone through this. We're going to be okay. We're going to get through this as well. But I think what troubles me the most is that there is this not an understanding of the differences in the media out there. And we really have to be extremely critical of what we're seeing and what we're reading and asking questions. And I get this all the time where I will broadcast a story or I'll write a story for our digital platforms and somebody will call me and they'll say, hey, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I've got a question about something you just said. And I said, listen, don't worry about hurting my feelings. I'm a journalist by trade. We have to be strong enough to handle the criticism too. So, you know, I think, Barbara, what you were raising the question of is a great one. I just encourage everybody out there listening, you've got to be critical about your news sources and find the ones that you truly believe can be unbiased.
What do you think these days, Jeremy, of the erosion of newspapers, which originally became the backbone of investigation and investigative journalism?
So it's not going to surprise you, George, at all to hear me say that it truly does, like, crush me a little bit when I see what's happening with the Denver Post and the elimination of jobs there and across the country newspapers that have folded. being a former newspaper guy myself, that's what I intended to be, was I wanted to write for newspapers and magazines. In the 90s, my professors were saying there, listen, you need to know that this is a medium that may not be around your entire career. And so it, what people, I think, miss with newspapers is that these were, and still are, in a lot of large cities and even mid-sized cities like Nashville, these are the paper of record. These, the glorious thing about newspapers and magazines is that you can take it and you can read it. And if you read a sentence and you think, wait, did I get that? You go back and read it. And I know that seems a little antiquated, but there's something about the newspapers being the voice of the city. And in so many cities, like Detroit and Los Angeles, it's vital voices that come. Even our newspaper, the Tennessean, has these vital voices that come out of the newspapers. And it kills me a little bit because I hate the fact that there's so many people that will never know, you know, the importance of these newspapers. And I just keep thinking there is an answer out there to keep this relevant. There is a way to keep this relevant. And I think we've seen, thank God to Hollywood. You can criticize Hollywood as much as you want to, but they've done these incredible films about the power of journalism lately, from Spotlight to the paper. That's an old one. But these in really showcasing what these journalists went through in print publications to try to get this, you know, to try to challenge the powers that be and the vital role they play in our democracy. If you do anything today, I hope that you take a real examination of the importance of your local television stations and your local newspapers and what they bring to your community.
And speaking of Hollywood, let's go to Hollywood, Maryland. Frank's with us. Hey, Frank, go ahead.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you.
Sure.
On behalf of citizens all over the country, I really appreciate investigative reporters. They do a great job getting the money back for a senior citizen that got swindled out of $700. The other day, the investigative reporter went to the business, and the senior citizen tried to get the money back for 6 months. The investigative reporter went there. They sent a check the next day. They sent a check to the next day to the senior citizen for the the $700 and some dollars. And I really appreciate that. They look out for the little people. Now, that phrase, fake news, that was, President Trump said he coined the phrase. We know he didn't. That phrase was out there before World War II. And the thing with him, he's a proponent of fake news. Like saying President Obama was born somewhere other than the United States. And when we ask him for proof, you get a backhand. He doesn't produce any proof.
Well, part of that could be true. Jeremy?
Yeah, you know, I first off greatly appreciate you what you said at the very beginning of this because of your statement there, because of investigative reporters, especially for television stations, we kind of pride ourselves in trying to help our viewers and newspapers as well and everything. But having, you know, running in a pretty large investigative unit that I do here in Nashville, we make it a huge point to try and serve our community. And it reminded me of something that just happened yesterday. I, for a decade now, have been doing investigations into this company that folded, and they literally were scamming people who are desperate for health insurance. And we sent in our hidden cameras and exposed their culture of how they were lying to customers. These are people that thought they were buying health insurance. They had cancer or AIDS, and this company was literally selling them worthless discount cards. And it was a huge undercover investigation, and the end result was that more than $1 million was paid back to the victims of this company. And that truly is what you want to do. It's more than just exposing political corruption. It is very much serving our viewers and our readers, and it's really what we set out to do. And I, you know, yesterday the reason I was in federal court is the guy that ran the company is very likely going to be sentenced to prison this week. His sentencing hearing is underway. But I want to get back to what you were talking about, the fake news and President Trump. It is something that President Trump has capitalized on. It is very much something that he and his administration use as a way to counter their critics. I have broadcasted live for hours from Trump rallies here in Nashville, and there is no joke. When he gets up to the stage to address his fan base, he is very critical of the media, and the crowds turn to the media and they chant fake news and they say things to you because there is a real anger in the country that I think that people were not cognizant about until President Trump became our president. But you're absolutely right. It is a term that predates President Trump. I think that there have been some people that have said it was actually President Obama that first started using this term. I think it's unclear where the actual term itself came from, but it is certainly at use here. And in getting back to President Trump at one point, criticizing President Obama or candidate Trump at that time about his birth records. This is what I get back to over and over again by demanding the proof yourself, demanding that you as a consumer say, okay, well, you said this, but show me the proof, all right? Show me the proof. And that's truly what I try to do in my investigations is that if I have public records, if I have video, if I have something that proves to you what I'm doing a story on, you're going to see it. And not only are you going to see it, you're going to have it online as well. So there is no question about that. And I really think that's what all of us as journalists are trying to do is show this definitive proof so we can stamp out this fake news concept. And it is infuriating to me that this is used over and over again by politicians. And it's not just President Trump and his administration. It's picked up by politicians across the political spectrum. That it is just a way to silence their critics. And I hope people realize that, is that this is simply a tactic. And like I keep saying, you know, it's up to us as Americans, as consumers of news, to be extremely critical about what we're told.
What do you think of the stuff on Facebook, for example, that truly could be fake?
So that's the reality of it, George, and you know this as well.
Not done by journalists, but done by people.
This is fake, and that's what people need to realize is that especially, you know, let's go back 6 months, maybe even a year or so. So much of what was on Facebook that was being shared around and put on Twitter and everything was fake. And I think that's hard for us to sit there. And especially people that shared that information, they'll say, listen, you know, hey, I saw it on Facebook, I shared it, and it was fake. And it's infuriating because it really did erode so much faith in journalists, even though it wasn't coming from journalists. It was coming from a site that so many people relied on. And it frankly, Facebook should have done a better job. And they know that. And they have come out and said, we should have done a better job filtering out what was fake and what was real. And which leads me back again, a year ago, if we had known, hey, listen, folks, don't just widely share what you read on Facebook. You know, look at the source, look at where it's coming from. But I'll see it today. I was on Facebook, and I am very lucky to have many friends on Facebook who are across the political spectrum. And I saw something that someone posted, and I looked at it, and I said, that's clearly fake. You've gotten this from some robot or something that has, you know, put this on social media, and you've picked it up, and you're sharing misinformation, and you have an obligation to stop doing this. So it too, George, gets under my skin.
Well, and here's the other problem, too. How do you know what's fake and what isn't?
Well, and thus the topics of our time, right? How do we exist as Americans and sit there and say, listen, the leader of the free world, our president, whether or not you like him or not, is coming out and saying, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. Then you have reporters who, you know, are bound to be, you know, to everybody's got biases.
Hold on for a second, Jeremy. We'll come back to that, and we'll take final calls next. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Jeremy Finley. We're talking about investigative journalism, and his book, of course, The Darkest Time of Night. How did you get the title, Jeremy?
So, anyone that has gone through the publishing process knows the title is one of the sources of great despair, because you think you got a great title and then you have publishers that know a whole lot more than you do about what's going to sell. And they really challenged me to say, okay, find what the heart of this book is about. And obviously this tells the story of the disappearance of a U.S. senator's grandson, and he disappears in the woods in the middle of the night. So there's an obvious reference. But truly, the concept is that this is the darkest time of these people's lives, and they are going up against the government in a true conspiracy to try to find the truth. So not only are they facing racing against the clock to try to find this missing child, but they are really challenging the government on every aspect of what may or may not have happened to this boy. So it truly references kind of the dark times that we all face in our lives.
The missing girl, Tabitha Tudors. We just got an email from Ed Dames, who's our remote viewer expert, and he said he's going to put that on his assignment to find her.
Well,
so see what happens.
I will tell you, anybody that hears that story and reads about it will have the same kind of reaction, because it is one of those cases where it chills you to think about what happened to her. And I can guarantee you that if anybody can offer any type of assistance, that the family will happily take that.
I don't expect you to speculate, Jeremy, but what does your gut tell you? Obviously, she was abducted or picked up, but what do you think happened after that?
You know, and again, being a journalist, we never, as you said, George, can speculate, but all of the evidence really picks to some kind of that she was taken. I hate to even go down that road, but this was a little girl who was deeply loved by her family, and really, just 13 years old, and to just vanish like that, and for there to be no explanation. And let me tell you, this family was scrutinized. Their friends were scrutinized over and over again.
Oh, you always are looked at as the first suspect.
Absolutely. And so they went through all kinds of hell themselves, you know, that have gone through this. But, for her to be gone for this long, for her to be just vanished like that, you have to think that somebody took her. And I do have to hold out a little bit of hope that we have seen cases across the country, especially in the last couple of years, where missing people have been found and they've gone through hell, but they're alive and they've made their way back. And so there is a very big piece, I think, of all of us in this city that thinks, okay, maybe one day she'll come back.
All right, let's go to Rick in Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the program. Hi, Rick.
Hey, thanks, George. Great. Thanks so much for having a show like this.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. My honor to bring him on.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, so I did have a question, though, because I heard, I'm not familiar with your guest, but I did hear him say something about the fake news, and we should just, like, forget about the idea of fake news, because I've definitely become skeptical of all the news. I mean, I think all the news is potentially fake.
That's being skeptical. There's nothing wrong with that. What's so sad is that people have to think that way, Jeremy.
And it's true, and I completely understand why there is this concept of why, you know, I don't believe the news, because there has been so much criticism of journalism and people saying, listen, I just don't believe the media. But and not to sound like a broken record, but I want people to understand that there really is no such thing as the media. When you use that term, it's actually not accurate, because media is such a wide scope. You have to sit down and say, okay, what are the news organizations that I trust? What are who are the people that I really feel like does the homework to present to me accurate stories? Who are the people that show me the proof? Who are the people are skeptics like myself? And you truly do have to separate that from the rest of the noise, because let me tell you, folks, there's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And I understand. I understand why when our social media feeds are filled with distrust and everything, it's truly up to us to say, okay, I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to ask journalists to show me the proof, show me what's what's going on. Be fair in your reporting. And don't be afraid to be a critical reader or viewer and to stand up and say, show me the proof about this. But I do think we have to separate the noise, George. That's what's important.
Next up, we go to Tom in Statesville, North Carolina. Good to have you with us, Tom. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I think kind of a feed on what was just said. I think I'm kind of middle America. I'm an independent voter, and I kind of look a little bit at everybody during the day. And the thing about fake news, it's not so much that someone's just all out lying. The thing when I watch, like if you watch some Fox, some MSNBC, some CNN, you've got like Fox, like the main people will be very slanted in what they're saying. But you go over to, and talking about going back to the investigative reporting, which in the glory day, and there still are some of those, are out there, and your guest is, you know, God bless him if he's sound like he's doing that. But you go over to some channels like MSNBC, CNN, and when it becomes journalism, when you just report someone else's news story, like MSNBC will literally just hold up a newspaper, and he says from the bias standpoint, they'll just pull out a news story and report that news story as its fact without doing any of their own investigative journalism at all, and so will CNN. And, of course, there's another network, we talk about Fox, sometimes will literally just avoid one side and just give you one side.
Well, what's happening now in the cable world, and Jeremy, I think you'll attest to this, they have created their niche based on the side they're on, whether they're left and right. They have lost the unbiased image that most of us would prescribe as journalists when we were doing it in our day, and you're doing it in yours. Now they have basically carved out their niche doing what they're doing.
And you're absolutely right, George. And the caller, I think, makes a good point, too, is when you take someone else's work and you talk about it. I like to think that in the cases that they're holding up a newspaper and saying, hey, look, the Washington Post is reporting this, and then they kind of analyze it. But here's what, again, about the cable news that people need to realize. There, so much of what cable news gets its reputation from are the pundits, from the commentators, because they come on at prime time, they have huge audiences, they have great influence. But remember, Shep Smith, who does the news for Fox, is a critical independent journalist, and he is the anchor of one of their foremost newscasts. He is not a pundit. He is not a commentator. He's a newsman. And their reporting, he really challenges the president. He really challenges some of what is put out there and tries to tell the truth. So I think it's vital for people to realize there's a huge difference, especially in cable news, by the people that are coming on giving their commentary and the people that are showing up in the newscast. But again, I think that we all should be extremely critical. If you're watching any type of news programming or reading something that you saw on social media that doesn't have a critical eye to it, I think you have to be a bit skeptical because you have to be able to realize that as journalists, we are skeptical for a reason, because it is our mission. Our mission is to try to ferret out the truth the best we can with the proof that we can find. And so, you know, those of us that are journalists, you know, we stay away from sharing our opinion, and it better not show up in the stories that we do.
Well, and what you need to understand when you watch a particular cable outlet, you need to know going in that this leans right, leans left. I happen to know Sean Hannity very well. He's a dedicated, hardworking broadcaster. He leans right. He calls and talks to President Trump quite often. Not a lot of reporters can get away with that. But I wouldn't call Sean just a straight journalist. He's very opinionated when it comes to his decision. So, you know, in terms of, do you listen to Sean for straight news? No, you're going to get it from his right-hand side perspective.
And it's absolutely true. And people, I believe in the intelligence of the American people. I believe that we as a country are savvy enough to understand the difference. There are going to be people that will say, well, I saw this on MSNBC last night, and so I firmly believe this. And this goes back to what I said maybe in the last hour, is if you're listening to a a cable show or you're reading something because you like, you agree with what they're telling you, because you like what it is that they're telling you, I think that should be your first warning sign. If you think, oh, this is exactly what I think and I agree with this, when you watch the news, when you read newspapers, when you get online, look for the places that challenge your point of view. This will make you a better consumer. This will make you a more informed person. If you want to watch commentators like Sean Hannity at night, who, and you agree with what he has to say, that's completely fine. My big concern about this is that I think that it is so dividing us, and that it puts us in camps which I think are inaccurate. As Americans, we are not black and white. We are gray. Over and over again, it is shown that you may lean conservative, you may lean liberal, or you may be somewhere in the middle, but we are all multifaceted, and we are not one camp or the other. And when we start listening to the other side and realizing that they may have a point of view, I think that's essential. And it's what we as reporters do. When we hear one side of a story, we go to the exact opposite and say, okay, here's what we found out about this. What do you think about this? And then you present them both and you let people know. But George, you have said this. The era of that happening in so many ways has passed.
Yeah, it's gone. When's the last time you heard somebody comment about CBS Evening News or ABC or NBC News? Nobody talks about that.
It's tough because, of course, I'm in the business, so it's very much, you know, very much of what we talk about. What I hear a lot of is people saying, you know, you're attracted to certain news organizations or whatever because you like the people, and that's fine, and you'll talk about that. But it's not only just because it's my business that I work in, but I think as a collective country, we have to sit there and say, we have to watch the news. We have to read the news. We have to know what's going on in the world. We cannot afford to not be educated about this. So it's tough, but I will say, you will see news magazines like 60 Minutes. You will see, and I'm just going to stick with 60 Minutes, still to this day, one of the brightest shining examples of the best journalism out there. And it is still incredibly popular, and where people are tuning into this night, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, because they trust the people on there. And so it's shows like that that give me faith. And then I just came from a conference of investigative reporters 2 weeks ago. And this was a place of 2,000 investigative reporters, maybe a little bit less, were at this event. And over and over and over again, I ran into and talked to reporters across the country and across the globe who say, all I want to do is tell the truth.
Yeah.
I have dedicated my life to this. And let me tell you, folks, they're out there, and we're working extremely hard to try and earn your trust.
40 years ago, Jeremy, I developed a pilot program for one of our stations that was, I called the Advocates, because they asked me, they said, what do you think the next evolution of news is going to be? And I said, it's going to be opinion. And they said, what do you mean opinion? I said, it's not going to be a straight newscaster giving the news. It's going to be someone giving their opinion. And so let's develop a program called the Advocates, so people going right in when they watch it, they know this person's going to take a stand on something, whether you agree with him or not, but that's what it's going to be. And sure enough, here we are 40 years later, they're all doing it.
Yeah, you predicted the future is what you did there, George. And you do have to watch and see the leading journalists of our time. And they truly are, whether or not it's Anderson Cooper or Shepard Smith on Fox News or any of the news anchors or again on 60 Minutes, you know, these are old school news people.
Absolutely.
These are people that are like, look, I'm not here to give you my opinion. I'm here to tell you what happened today. And that's kind of what I'm just hoping that people will take away from this, is that there's such a difference between the commentators and the opinion makers and then the true journalists. And it's easy. It's easy to find the ones. And I'll say this again. Just because Fox News was critical of Obama, and just because MSNBC is critical of Trump, it's because they're doing their jobs. their jobs is to, are to be critical.
That's their format.
It is their format.
That's who they are.
It's who they are, and it is, but you have to realize that. You have to say,
well,
okay,
that's the problem. Not everybody realizes
that's
that.
That's right.
They go in thinking they're going to get an impartial presentation,
right.
And it's biased, and they don't get it. They're having a difficult time understanding that.
Yeah, and thus we have the fake news, you know, chaos that is across the country right
Absolutely.
Now.
Like, Jeremy, I wish we could take the rest of the calls, but my friend, we're out of time. You keep in touch with us, okay?
I would love to, George. It's been a huge pleasure to be on, and thanks to everybody for listening.
Good luck with the book, The Darkest Time of Night. Just came out. It's available all over the place, especially Amazon.com. Stick with us all week. First couple hours tomorrow, Ty Bollinger joins us talking about some breakthroughs in cancer treatment that he sees. Stick with us. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.